My name is Bill Clark, and I am the host of the Scrambled Eggs and Ham podcast. And it's a beautiful Friday up here in Jersey. And this afternoon, I have two beautiful hams on. The first ham is named Jennifer Key. Jennifer's been on the podcast before. If you get a chance, listen to her episode. It's called Breaking the Silence. It's absolutely mind-blowing and a great experience and a great story and very, very, very helpful for our personal growth. And also, when you're listening to her and you're finished with her podcast, her episode, please check out Connie. Connie's episode is called From Bars to Brushes. That's right. Connie was a nurse in a correctional institution. And now she's painting these beautiful pictures and telling her story about her experience with stroke and working in a facility, correctional facility. So anyway, listen, this afternoon, this is 2024, and I hope you all had a wonderful and a prosperous New Year party, New Year's resolution, all these different things, you know, that we do in the beginning of the year. And one of those things that we do is we set resolutions, right? Goals. So we want to talk about a little bit about that with Jennifer this afternoon. The second thing that we want to talk about is attraction. Attraction, I know you said attraction. Attraction can mean a lot of things. So let's start with that. Connie, you wanted to talk about, are we victims of the things that we attract to our life? Is that correct?
Right. That's a big topic for me. I say that because, you know, feeling like a victim just gives away so much power, you know, because it's really any obstacle, anything you undergo, whatever situation you experience, you know, is supposed to be a learning tool, you know, and the victimization comes in when you don't learn from it.
Okay. All righty. Can you share an experience?
Sure. I think it's, you know, I have to say that, you know, growing up, for example, you know, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, like your vision, what you see. So, you know, I never saw a stable marriage, you know. So my vision of a stable marriage was someone else's creation. So now it's for me to undo that in my mind and see something different, you know, instead of saying, well, my mother did it, so that's why I did it, and there we go. You're a victim again, so now you've given away power. So what I'm saying is that I'm working on myself to just see something different, have the courage to see a vision of what happy marriage or happy life or happy relationship looks like, you know. It takes courage.
Wow. And work. And Miss Jennifer Key.
Yes. Well, I kind of had a question before I answered your question for Connie. So I'm curious, in your like evolution of understanding, like what you were witnessing or what you were reading, or therefore trying to then emulate yourself, right? Meaning, see it, therefore you're thinking you're going to attract that because that's what your environment. Right. Have you given any thought to your limiting beliefs of those situations, which perhaps is really spot you know, that you are in terms of the attraction?
You know what it is, what it's like, Jen? It's like I'm a visual artist, right? So I'm a painter, right? So when I want to see a sunny beach, in my mind, I have to create the sunny beach first. I don't just get to the beach. I've created it in my mind. I've laid out plans. I've seen it. I have a visual of where I want to go. Now, if I were to use someone who never gets to the beach or never sees sunlight's vision, then that's what I would create. But you have to do such deep work and becoming honest. I had to do such deep work in becoming honest with what is it that I feel I can never attain? What is it that I can never, you know? So I changed that vision to there's nothing. All I have to do is catch a visual, whether it's in a painting, think about it, and then the action follows. But you have to vividly see, and that's where being an artist is really helpful, because I visually see every single pore in the face that I draw. You know, so that's how vivid your dream and your sight has to become. You know, and that's definitely as a result of being Buddhist and doing the work on myself.
Okay. I totally get that. So to answer kind of what you were asking, Bill, and to piggyback, Connie, on even what you're saying, mm-hmm. for me, this is really about the laws of attraction. And to my understanding and some of the research I've done, it's, you know, I believe there's 7 of them, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. to your point, right, you have to, without going through all 7, I'll say the main point of this is you have to, 1, think it, right? Right. Now it's a thought. Mm-hmm. Then you need to, 2, visualize it. So now mm-hmm. it's something that you can see. Then mm-hmm. you begin to write it down. Now it's physically in words, as words right. have power, as you know. And mm-hmm. this is where manifestation now starts to happen. And now you've thought it, seen it, mm-hmm. written it, and now you speak it.
Mm.
I am going to have abundance, or I statement. You can go down the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am worthy. Right. I am powerful, etc. I am strong, right? You suffered a stroke. I am mm-hmm. strong. I am healthy, right? So now
right.
it's out to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bill, to answer your point, my take on this is, if you're vibrating on the right frequency, then mm-hmm. anything that you desire is yours.
Right.
Period. Okay. You just got to tap mm-hmm. in, tune in to it. But it's mm-hmm. not like you can't have it. There's
right.
no, like, I'll never be able to achieve it. It's all there for you. You just have to be on the right frequency to tap into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, listen. Okay. Well, Connie, you started off with stating that you were observing your parents' relationships. Is that correct?
Right. I was going by what I felt from you know, the vibes they gave off. You know, that's all we do is we go by vibes. You know, what vibration are we feeling? You know, but with them, it had to change. It goes a step further when it goes, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
See, because I see, but then I feel it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every cell in the body responds to, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All righty. Okay. Okay. Attraction. All righty. One of the things, you know, I was talking about earlier is about setting goals, and this is a new year. And everybody mm-hmm. sets these goals, and 90% of them, based on the studies that I've, my research, and I'm a Harvard Review man. I love the Harvard Review. I've been reading their, mm-hmm. studying with them mm-hmm. for about 20 years. And I do research. Mm-hmm. I go back to them first. That's my first go-to research point. And it was talking about how 90% of the goals that people set during the beginning of the year never work. They never achieve them. They never bring them to realize. They never come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's true, or is that something to do with because of the people that we have in our environment, that we attract in our environment, are hindering us, or negative, or not pushing us, or not, mm-hmm. you know, should they be a part of it, or are we not saying the correct things? Like, I want to make $1 million so I can buy a Learjet, you know, attach it mm-hmm. to something. You know what I mean? Jen,
do what with it? You know, isn't it more like, Bill, you know, to add to what you're saying, you know, I want $1 million, but to do what? To what end? You know, I just think that universally that how things may work in my experience is that, you know, it has to have purpose.
Right.
Anything you want, if it has the biggest dream wins, put it like that.
Right.
The biggest vision always wins. You know, like say, like if I have a vision of you got scrambled eggs and ham, but see, I got Wendy's with. So if my dream is more vivid than yours, we're going to end up at Wendy's. You know what I'm saying? You understand me, bro? You see, it's how vivid, how big your dream is. And do you feel it? Because a dream is something you feel.
Okay.
That goes back to what you feel. You manifest what you feel. So I say feel rich. Feel like you could see, like with my tail walking sideways. I'm leaning, you know, 2016. I have this, so I got a little gangster lean to the left. So I, you know, but I'll straighten it out. You hear me? You hear me, Jen? I'll straighten it out and say, but
I hear you.
Upright.
Yeah, we hear you.
And
then
my body follows.
Well, listen, you know, talking about Wendy's, you know, an attraction. I was able to attract this great person to my life. Her name is Jennifer Key. And Jennifer
taught me about the 75-day, about Day Hard, right?
Mm.
And she's going to tell you a little bit about that, explain it to you, because, you know, I know she told me about it, I thought about it, and I made it happen.
I don't know.
You know, and my life changed tremendously, where
wow.
Jennifer and Connie, mm-hmm. I can no longer go to Wendy's and eat.
You sure can't.
I can't do it, Jen. I can't eat that stuff no more.
I know what's in it. Don't do it.
You know, I gotta eat.
I love it.
Part of my 75-day hard was that red meat had to stop. I stopped it for 75 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
some other parts of it was reading 10 pages a day of a nonfiction book, which Jen told me about.
Mm-hmm.
And other thing was, I added something to that, writing 5 pages a day for my novel.
Ooh, this is good, Jen. You know, this is good.
You know, and that yeah. was because of this person that I attracted in my orbit.
There you go.
I never heard about shit like that 75-day hard. I was going to, you know, just like another year come by. You know what I'm saying? And even Absolutely. Though I wanted to change those habits like Wendy's, but when Wendy's was calling me, I go. You know.
I know, and Wendy's is relentless.
You know.
True statement. Bill, I really appreciate that. I love it, Jen. I'm yeah. telling you, he was sharing with me, and I had no idea, you know. I mean, I should have known, I mean, it's awesome. And it's just the things that you do when you have a certain life force, you know, and really go into self. I love this, Jen. I'd love to talk about more of that, you know.
No, I'm happy to. So yeah. Bill, I'm gonna get back to what you were mentioning about mm-hmm. goal setting, mm-hmm. which directly mm-hmm. goes along the lines of still law of attraction and now 75 hard day challenge. So what you were saying, Connie, I think for Bill, I apologize, for goal setting, I think why most people fail at that process. One, I think it's just kind of mainstream hype. You know, people feel like they're missing out, you know, like FOMO. They don't want to like not be a part of the crowd and have so-called resolutions. Mm-hmm. So they just
right.
pick up things to be a part of something so they're not being left behind. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Two, goal setting is really simple. Like you said, for you, Connie, it's about feeling. I mean, for me, it's really those three things that you really mm-hmm. want to do when you're trying to set goals, right? So
mm-hmm.
you want to have a purpose, right? You want to have a mission, and you want to have mm-hmm. values around it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's really that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So
Amazing.
To tie that into the 75-day hard challenge and meeting you, Bill, and it being about the law of attraction, what perhaps all of us needed in our life at that time, I was really trying to practice discipline and mindset mm-hmm. change. That was the purpose mm-hmm. of the 75-day hard challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that don't know what that is, it's not easy. It mm-hmm. can be a lot of fun. I love how you altered it, Bill. I did a little tweaking myself. So the mm-hmm. five main staples of this challenge for 75 days straight is to, one, give up alcohol. Number mm-hmm. two, drink a gallon of water a day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number three, work out for 90 minutes a day, two separate mm-hmm. times, 45 minutes in an inside environment, 45 mm-hmm. minutes in an outside environment.
Mm-hmm.
Read at a minimum 10 pages of a book of your mm-hmm. choice. I know you pick nonfiction or fiction, but it's whatever you really like.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever eating plan you're going to be on, you got to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, you gave up red meat. Mm-hmm. I gave up all meat. Altogether. I took me out of my diet completely.
Jen, I also gave up alcohol for 75 days.
You have to. Yeah.
That was an easy one for me. I don't... That
That's
was
a hard
easy one.
One
for me.
The easy one was difficult. You know, I think even giving up meat and those things, I think it's a matter of
a lot of times, you know, Jen, and I love this plan, you know, and you know, a lot of folks will say, but I just don't have access to those things.
Mm.
You know, then you have to go back to your vision board and say, wait, what is so limited? You know, and I love all her processes are really so Buddhist-like, you know, Bill.
Yes.
They're all the processes that we utilize. It's amazing, Jeff. That's
true.
To show how universal it is.
Exactly. And then the last spin on it for me was, they, you know, some like to take a picture of themselves so that you see the transformation of your body, you know, physically over 75 days. So I posted my daily progress, you know, the first like 60 days and then, or the first 30 days. And then I did only 30 day increments moving forward. So I finished. It was hard. I did have to tweak it. Unfortunately, I lost. I started at 150 pounds. Mm-hmm. And in 30 days, I lost 20 pounds. So that's like a pound a day.
Wow.
So it was too much, too fast on my organs that I could then, you know, hurt myself. So I scaled back the workout and I didn't go as hard in the paint. Mm-hmm. 90 minutes is a lot when you're 130 pounds. Like, it's not really necessary.
I'll say,
you know?
Yeah. You could have had some Wendy's.
So, yeah. No.
Can I ask a question?
Garbage.
It is garbage, but it tastes good.
Can I ask you a question, Tim? What's the first thing you do? I'm going down your checklist, Bill. I'm just all checking right. stuff. Okay, what's the first
thing? Like I said, so just no alcohol.
Mm. Okay, check.
Water a day.
Check.
You have to read 10 pages minimum of a book.
So check.
Whatever eating plan you're going to be on, you got to stick with it. So the point is to eat healthier. You can't like eat Wendy's and do this. That defeats the purpose.
No, you can't. You cannot.
Like, you got to decide what you want to give up or alter or change or improve. And then you want to work out 90 minutes every day.
Does that include, cleaning the bathroom and around the toilet in the bathroom?
No, it does not.
Yes, it should qualify, Jim, because
I didn't say steps, honey. I did not say steps. I said workout. Okay?
I swear, it used to be a whole regimen workout. I would just go up, because, you know, the other house that was in there, Bill, it was three floors, and it was deep steps, so I averaged about 18 times going up and down.
Okay.
Just sort of sometimes trying to see if I can check my body.
Okay, that counts, right? Okay,
yeah.
That counts.
Thank you, girl.
Girl, that counts.
Oh, the bill. I'm writing it down.
Tell me. I'm very curious. I know you know, kind of changed things up a little bit to kind of relate to your own world in terms of writing, which was great. So what was the goal setting for you to do that challenge? What was the purpose for you?
The purpose for me was, as a writer and an activist and a podcaster, was discipline, like yourself, to see if I could do it, if I could not eat red meat, if I could stop the alcohol for 75 days, if I could take a picture, a selfie of myself every day for 75 days. And I wanted to feel better, healthful, more healthy. More, because when you feel healthy, when your body's healthy, your mind is healthy.
It works in correlation
with your mind and body is, you know, together. So I needed that. Like you said you needed an upgrade. I said, damn, you know what? She's got something here.
Mm.
And I should strive to improve my life like this, you know, so I can see my grandchildren. So I can retire in London, like I told Cher with Jen. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, I like that place.
You know, just like be a better husband, a better partner, better father. Because when your mind is, you know, when your mind is clear, the ground is illuminated. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yes.
I needed to do that. I needed to clear my mind and just rescaffold everything over again, because I did retire. I didn't want to retire. I wanted to stay in the field that I was in, which was behavior health. And I had COVID 3 times in New York. What are you going to do? You know?
You're a trooper, my friend. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. You know, and so wifey said, Bill, he said, baby, you've been bringing home the bacon. Now it's time for me to bring home the hog.
Oh my God.
You know.
All right, so I'm curious. Why no that is, I'm telling you.
But anyway, so far, and Jenna, maybe you could tell us something about how to get jobs for old peoples.
Wait, what?
How do you get jobs for old, you know, like I know you're a recruiter. So how do you get jobs?
I apologize.
How do you get jobs for old people?
Bill, can I ask you one question?
Yes.
First of all, you've got to teach them to talk with me.
Come on.
You got to get out of the bed and stretch in the morning time. Not stretch out on the bed. Stretch in the morning time. You know, like you've got to really develop a regimen where you can start moving your body again. But, you know, and then we crack, 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 crack. So that's too much noise in somebody's office, Jen. So back to you.
Oh, no, Connie, but they're doing the 75-day hard. We really got them on the 75-day. They're not going to be crickling and crackling like that no more.
No. So I'm curious, now that you did the challenge, right?
Yes, ma'am.
I know I'm happy to talk to you a little bit about the next transformation for myself, and I'll be really honest for those that are interested in doing this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy, meaning after I completed it for 75 days, now I'm in a pattern, right?
Okay.
So it's kind of like I had it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not feeling the pressure of doing it for the first time and not liking the experience. Now my body's kind of grown accustomed to these habits.
Yeah.
So I still, though, craved eating meat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the facts. It wasn't like I rid myself of ever eating meat. But I did independent research on my meat choices and selection where I live, which is in Florida, and it's just not the best.
And
if I want to really eat clean, I'm going to have to grow it myself, like purchase livestock and just do it myself, or just not have it at all because it's not even necessary for the human body
by
factual clinical data. Like, we don't need it to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing. I did a visualization thing for myself, you know, and I put it in perspective, ground meat, ground turkey, ground, and all the E. coli that sits on the surface. When you grind it up, now we've got an E. coli sandwich. Do you know it took me 5 seconds to quit meat?
Yeah. Well, okay. That's Jennifer, what kind of meat do you eat? Do you consume?
I don't.
Okay.
I gave it up. So the meats I was eating were chicken, which is the most popular and the most infested with disease and bacteria because it's mass produced. And now we know they are gluing chicken together to have it look appealing to the consumer to purchase in the packaging. That's one.
Oh, no.
Beef, I mean, come on. How can we all not like a steak? They're delicious.
Yep.
But again, that red meat is not necessary in our body, and it sits in our colon and in our intestines for a very long time. And if you don't know about your cells and your digestive system, like, it's all sitting there. It's rotting, which is why when you defecate, there's an odor. You have dead, rotting meat in your body.
Oh, gross.
I'm keeping it real. Yeah.
It stinks, and it's not sexy. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. So... And then there's other meats, right? Turkey, duck, venison. We can go all down the line.
Yeah, I wish I had some duck right now. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, at the end of the day, it's just not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer living in tribal environments where we go out and hunt our food and come back and kill it, which was really clean food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when they killed a bison, it was like, for real, a bison.
Mm-hmm. It was delicious. You know? They didn't glue parts of a chicken with a cow and throw in a goat ear for, you know.
Yeah, grind it up.
So, grind it up. So, no thanks. So, meat, I slowly incorporated it back because I was craving the protein.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized I just wasn't utilizing enough protein in another category in terms of, like, fruits and vegetables. So, then I had to double up my...
How about emotionally? See, you know, the foods, you know, if you've got a sluggish bowel, you've got a sluggish life, you're just sluggish. Mentally clouded, you're sluggish. You know, that aspect of just being the finest you. Did you ever, you know, I would love to document, but I'm going to, you know, I told Bill that I tried this thing, but I found that I mostly live it now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but you know, what I find is that my emotions directly related to what I have eaten. That's something that, you know, in terms of mental health, my goodness.
Let me unpack that. Let's unpack that for a second, Connie. So let me make sure I'm understanding, because there's two things that I just heard here. If you're saying the food is allowing you to have a particular emotion attached to it, right? May that be positive, negative, indifferent, right? Mm-hmm. Nostalgic or what have you. Mm-hmm. Then is it fair to say you're allowing yourself to be led by your emotion, which means you don't have them in check?
Well, you know, if you have emotions in check, you make wise choices of food. And then it becomes a continuous cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a good sunny day and you say, gee, I want some watermelon and some cucumber and some, you know, because it's warm outside, you know. And then you notice the next day how you feel. You're not as sluggish. So it just sets off this complete chain reaction of feel good, look good, feel good, look good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Make good choices. The food is so important in terms of balancing yourself mentally. You know?
Yeah.
I hear you. You know, it's I went after that. You know, because, you know, it's something about, it's, you know, in the morning for breakfast, and this was weird, but I'd have a big old bowl of spinach with red onions, strawberries, blueberries, and avocado. And that's my breakfast. And I noticed when I ate that, I had more energy, more oxygen to the brain, better thinking, less confusion, more food to the blood cells, you know what I mean, to the cell. You know, so it just sets off this magnificent process. And I think in this country, Jen, like, you know, in the whole world, is how do we make this kind of thing affordable? And how do we attract that kind of a fortune to our lives, you know?
Interesting.
It comes back to what you attract and being what you eat. You attract it. First, you have to see it to get the vision. Okay, I need strawberries.
Right.
I need baritone. I need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, so you know what I mean? Like emotions attached to that. Now, I would love to know, like, see how you are affected day to day by putting down certain foods and drinks and things, and the emotion, also a setting when you're eating. Like, if you're in a room with a vibration of anxiety, and you eat a meal, so that becomes an anxious meal. It's so much about a feelings. Food, you know?
It's so interesting you say it that way. So two things just came up for me when you said that. One, I'm in training still, so I'm in, you know, learning, like, student mode, to then view my body what it is. It's a vessel on this timeline in this universe. For those of you that have heard my first podcast, I'm somewhat of a modern-day hippie, meaning, like, this is just my vessel, okay?
Right.
However, on this timeline and this particular universe, in terms of the rules, our body is just energy. It's just a computer. So if you know all the right ingredients and all the right code to put into this vessel, you're golden. So I'm suggesting that we no longer look at food in the way that we've been taught.
Right.
We should be looking at food as fuel, period, because that's what our bodies are. We just need fuel to continue to be able to use our bodies the way they've been designed.
Right. Yeah. So, I follow that one.
So what you're eating... emotional. What you're eating is no longer for satisfaction of the taste. It's just to grow and mature your vessel.
Right?
So I'm saying that ties right into what you were then saying.
Yeah.
Right? About, you know, how do I feel now on the day to day?
Right. And I'm
a totally different person.
Approach. Yeah. I'm telling you, you're not as, you know, when you're feeling sluggish, you can't get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's an endless cycle of I've failed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bill, what do you think? Did that happen for you?
No, it doesn't happen for me. But I have realized some different changes when I eat certain foods in my psyche, right? Like, you see, you know, like different foods, like when I stick to like nuts, berries, like in the morning, oatmeal, you know, the podcast is named Scrambled Eggs and Ham, but it's not something I consume every day. Okay. I want to make the listeners know that it's not a cooking. This is not a cooking.
Not a
podcast.
Cooking show.
No. It is a cooking show, but it's not a cooking show. We are doing cooking. We're cooking right now. Both of you women are cooking.
Yes. We're cooking now.
You know, but however, for me, I try to stay like close to like green, you know, like green, like things like Beyond Meat that they have out now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not meat, but it tastes like meat, whatever.
You're not eating that, are you?
Why? What's up?
Oh, okay. I'm happy to talk, you know, at great length with you about that. But if that, you know, good to know.
No, no, no. Go ahead. Go ahead. What kind of poisons are they putting in
that? It's been stated that Beyond Meat is not, it's basically laboratory grown meat is what that is, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So as you could imagine, just like expand your mind for a second, just even in the pharmaceutical portion of this, in terms of laboratory manufactured medicine, right, versus natural medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So you're potentially ingesting chemicals that have no business being in your body just because the so-called FDA says it's approved for us to eat it and it's safe. Mm-hmm. It's not meat. Mm-hmm. We don't even need meat one.
It's processed. So,
and it's processed, which means it's not processed. Whole. Your body really requires
It's the same as a chicken that's supposed to grow to full maturity in a year, it's a month. It's the same process. So if you they changed the name and gave you the same shit. Slick shit, don't check it out. That's really slick.
It is. Yeah, very slick. They're like, let's repackage the same garbage with a better name.
Yeah. Well, they got me. They got me, Jennifer. You saved me with the food.
I'll help you.
Alrighty. No more Beyond Meat. So now it's going to be real meat.
No meat.
Real meat. I'm going to get me a pork chop. And that's what I'm going to get.
He said I was going to go out and face and get my food now.
I'll be back. My parents, like Connie, like your parents, I think your parents were farmers.
They were raised horses back in Ocala.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
In Ocala, they were, that's what they did. Well, Ocala had roads and everything. My people were horse people. That's what they did. Everything from cowboys, called cowboys, whatever, but they were horse people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. I don't even want to, if I look at anything that looks remotely like a horse, I'm like, it's all in creating a visual for yourself to get an understanding of how that may not be beneficial.
But you grew up with horses.
I didn't grow up with horses. I just look like it because I have bow legs.
Oh, my goodness.
As a matter of fact, you we're all bow legged. Like my aunts and stuff, my great aunts and stuff, everybody has bow legs, but I don't think that has anything
to do with riding horses.
We just wanted to make sure we had a firm grip, is what I'm saying.
Let me tell you, I love horses. At one point, I got a partial at University of Kentucky, where they have a lot of horses. You know, I'm sure you heard of Churchill's Down, you know, and I got a partial out there for grad school. And then another baby popped up. And I said, my wife said, well, you know, if you want to go out there and do that, I I'm not going to stop you, but there's a baby coming. I said, you know what? I love horses, you know, and that's something.
They're just so mystical they're so beautiful. I've never ridden it. Well, I've been on a horse, but I've never really ridden horses or been into it. It's just something that my family, way back on my mother's side, that was what the deal was in Florida. So, they said that my great-grandfather, you know, that's how he died at 24. His name was Arcola, is that he fell off a horse. But more than likely, he got stomped by, you know, how things were back then. More than likely, you know, everybody got stomped by a horse, but more than likely, it was brutal.
Yeah, that's sad. That's some sad stuff. That's a young age to lose your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
But she married again, and settled in Florida. You know, she had a hard life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She had a rough life. She was, you know, back then, you know, we don't talk a lot about how, you know, indigenous groups also owned slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
You know, so it's all of that history inside, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, horses, they're beautiful. Like, they're mystical. I want to draw one as soon as I could get one to stand still.
So, back to setting goals, right, Jen? I was reading about this thing. They have this app out now called the BaaS, you know, Boss as Service, where you have this virtual boss. You put your goals down, you send them off to them, and they check your goals. They look at everything you wanted to achieve this year, and they call you on it. And if you mm-hmm. don't achieve that goal, you set a goal for a day, say it's to ride a horse today. Mm-hmm. They ask you, did you ride a horse? And you say, no, they say you're full of shit. They come back and they call you and say, you did, you know, they're strict. You're not achieving your goals. You're short, you know, whatever, yeah. short term. Yeah, there's a company that does that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's deep. A company. The good thing is that, you know, it's always a good idea, you know, for me to write, Bill, to just kind of be self-regulatory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, they wouldn't take into account your microcosm.
Their
small world, you know, because it's so big. That's why I just think it's really great when we can develop ourselves so that we're self-regulatory.
Right.
You know, centered, like, you know, like Buddhists and a lot of spiritually awakened folks do.
Get
you
off.
You know, in terms of goals. Yep. In terms of goals.
Yeah, get off
that. That's really,
get off the AI, right? Leave it alone. Leave the AI alone. What do you think about Jen?
Well, Bill, you know, I was thinking about your question, and it saddens me, actually. I'm not happy to hear
that
we're a society of people that are at a state of consumerism and instant gratification level that we need an app to hold ourselves accountable
mm-hmm.
for our own work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just like gigantic period at the end of that sentence. So that saddens me.
Yeah.
But more importantly, it's not something that is surprising because mm-hmm. we live in a slave-like mentality since the day we were born. And I don't mean slavery that was done to Black people in this country. I mean all of us are slaves. White people, Black people, Indian, Asian, Hispanic, every culture, okay? We're all slaves. And just to give you, like, the breakdown is, right, we're all bred to what? Go to school,
work
in a classroom for 8 hours, right? Only get limited amount of sleep. Don't get to take advantage of Mother Nature while she's shining. We're in school while Mother Nature's doing her best work. We're provided food that's garbage, right? We're given medication to combat the disease that comes from the food. I can talk for hours on this, right?
Yeah. But I'm sorry about, you know, well, actually, I'm not sorry about it, but, you know, actually, it's just another tool. You know, like some people say,
That's
another tool.
Everybody needs a difference, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, some people, like me, I'm a stroke survivor. Connie's a stroke survivor.
Yeah.
And sometimes a stroke will mess up your something called executive functioning, where you have problems with scheduling, you have problems with remembering, you have problems with, you know, task-orientated projects. So something like that, to have something like that available to you, I think it's absolutely phenomenal. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps for that population, and I can't speak on any of those experiences as I have not suffered a stroke myself. So for the population of folks that need assistance with certain things like that because of their cognitive inabilities, I get it.
But
what you're talking about, that app was really created for the masses, right? Not a disabled or a specific targeted group.
Mm-hmm.
So it saddens me to know that even one of us on this call, granted you guys are stroke survivors, so it doesn't really count for my topic, but let's pick two other people that I know, that any one of us need an app to hold us accountable to what we say we want to do. That just tells me that you're really
self-support.
Serious.
No.
Say your self-support.
I think it can get
that deep, you know. So, I mean, my thing is that, you know, let's incorporate, and I like the app. That's cool. You may need that for some things, but more importantly, you know, get to the source of you want to do something, right?
You want to accomplish something, and you're struggling with getting from A to Z or A to B, right?
Well, you know why you struggle? You know why people don't do what they say they're going to do?
Why?
Like the most common reason why people procrastinate.
Why is that?
because they don't even believe why they're doing what they're doing. They don't know the why. They just are like, okay, you know, I want to work out 3 days a week. And they think the end goal is because they want to have a shredded, cool body at 135 pounds. Mm-hmm. They didn't put any real thought or any real intention to the why. So they just now start. And then, of course, you're going to fall off because you're not really passionate about it. I'm not talking about the people that need assistance in being reminded. So take them out of this conversation. But for your average Joe, as they say in this country,
right?
Mm-hmm. Do you really need an app tell you to do 15 push-ups? Do you really need an app to say, did you accomplish your to-do list today? No. Really be intentional about what is realistic mm-hmm. to accomplish in any period of time.
Right.
Like multitasking in my field, mm-hmm. people want to say that that's a positive. You know, like, oh, we look for multitaskers because mm-hmm. you can be put on multiple projects at a time. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst skill.
It is.
Multitasking is not a positive. Because you never finish anything with any sense of urgency or any real completion mm-hmm. because you're pulled in so many directions at the same time.
Yes.
Hence the term ADD and ADHD.
Yes.
Okay.
I've been there. I have been there in a corporation.
I'm there.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, then you're going to tell us how do you, what do you do for that? You know, when you feel burnt out by multitasking and, you know, How do you rejuvenate yourself and how do you get through that? What tools do you use to get through multitasking? When you, even for people like myself and Connie, it's very bad for us. People who have brain injury or stroke or aneurysms. Multitasking is bad for us.
I'm on board with you. I don't think multitasking should be encouraged. What I found to be useful and really beneficial for me, I can't speak for others mm-hmm. and their practices. Mm-hmm. I've come to a place of acceptance of what my capabilities are. I know what I can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I can't learn, but I know what I'm capable of.
Right.
So if you give me 10 assignments and you say I need them all done by the end of the day, guess what? I'm reviewing that very quickly and I'm telling you that I can't. And that's not a negative mm-hmm. to make them think I'm not qualified.
Mm-hmm.
I'm simply saying these 10 things are going to require X amount of time and research, so I can maybe do 2 of the 10.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kind of prioritize what needs to get done.
Right.
Some of the tools that I use are really simple. They're free. So simple. I don't need an app. I just write down my priorities for the day. If this is a work setting, right? Let's say it's 5 things. I will work on any project for just 20 minutes at a time. And then I stop. I give myself a 10-minute break.
Mm-hmm.
I get away from my chair. I walk around. I might do a little exercise. Do a little lymphatic movement situation to get my brain moving, and then I'll go back to the task.
Right.
So to your point earlier when I was saying we're slaves, we've been taught to sit in a chair in school quietly for 45 minutes at a time. We've all had to do that from kindergarten till 12th grade. So it only makes sense to do that in the work environment, right? That's what we're being bred to be. Workers.
Right.
So school didn't teach us about breaks. School didn't give us the tools to mentally prepare for the pressure of the information. Right?
Yeah.
It's just
I agree
more.
With that.
Take more. Take more. Do more. Work harder. What? Harder? How about I work more gently?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
More smoothly. Right? So I'm suggesting just be kind to what your capabilities are. And own them. That doesn't make you less than. That doesn't make your coworker better than you. You just operate differently.
Right. Yeah. 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 Inclusion, right? Inclusion.
Absolutely inclusion. So I just learned so much from the two of you as it relates to being stroke survivors, not knowing the difficulties you may go through in any given day for someone who hasn't, who thinks it's like no big deal.
Right.
Yeah, like, why can't you remember the last 5 things I just said? Right. But maybe for someone in your situation, that's not possible anymore. But no one knows that. You're not walking around with a sticker that says I'm a stroke survivor. Right.
Wait a minute. You stop right there. you're first of all, you're an app. You hate apps. You're an app hater. Second thing is that, do you hire people who have strokes, Jennifer?
I'm here.
Do you hire people that suffer from strokes or disabilities?
Well, of course we hire folks that have disabilities. I can't speak to the disability as mm-hmm. it's not lawful to ask the what.
Okay.
There's the box of, are you disabled? Check the box. But we're not privy to what the disability is.
Right. But once you check, I got a question for you. I'm so happy you're on the air today with us here in New York. When they check the box, aren't they discriminated against anyway?
According to, I'll say, certain policies that are in place, it's not that they're discriminated against. It's voluntary. It's not a required checkbox.
But
it's always optional.
But if you had a disability and you say, well, wow, I really want this job, I'm not going to check that box. And then later on, they find out you have a disability. You're fired, right?
No, you're not fired. For what? There's nothing that you didn't falsely state about yourself. It's not a lawful question to ask. It's an optional question. Just like disclosing your race is optional, not mandatory.
However, but companies get tax benefits for hiring minorities. Is that correct? Or is that not? That
absolutely. Just like they get tax benefits for hiring disabled individuals as well. Mm-hmm. There's a whole law and practice around that, as you know, is starting to change in this country.
Right. But what I found, the 100 side, the real side is that when you get into an environment and you have a disability, and I'm not talking about one where they have to create special space for you or work, environments for you. When you get into that space, managers don't know how to deal with people with disabilities.
Of course not.
Don't know how to deal with it. They don't want to deal with that. They don't want to deal with a person with a disability. They have to manage more than Joe or Susan. The reality is that they don't want to manage or hire really people with disabilities. They have to do it because of ACA and because of these different HIPAA, things of whatever. But managers don't really want to hire a person with a disability unless they have someone like that in their home, they have a family member. That's my take on it. They really don't want to deal with a person with disabilities.
It's interesting. I can't say that that's the answer for all, to say all managers are that way would not be a true statement. I think there's a good portion of the population of people, non-managers alike, just people in general that have a affliction towards people that are disabled.
Right.
Meaning they don't understand what the disability is and therefore aren't interested in finding out to then communicate and interact. So that's just one. Forget about the work environment. That's just in general. You're walking down the street, you see someone who visually looks disabled, most people kind of move away.
Yeah.
That's their natural instinct, right?
Right.
And they did that, I think they did that experiment. And I wish I had the names for the podcast, and I apologize I don't, but I did see it on Instagram where even a baby who can't speak was touching a man that had basically no hand. He didn't have a hand yet, but, he lost his entire hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby was touching his upper hand in terms of his fingers. Mm-hmm. And then when he put his hand up that didn't have fingers, the baby reacted with a face of being, scared,
right,
if you will.
Right,
so naturally, visually, it's a deterrent. If you don't look like everyone else, right? Something that's not the same, most people, don't gravitate towards.
Right.
When you get to the work environment, there's a whole host of things that aren't appropriate in that setting for managers that they don't get enough training on. We just think people can be managers because they've been working for 15 plus years in a particular, discipline.
Yeah.
That's not what makes a manager.
Correct. I was a manager, and I understand, totally understand what you're saying. I agree with you. Connie, is Connie still there?
I think it dropped.
Oh, yeah. Hold on one second.
Let's try to get Connie back on.
Yes, let's see if we can get her back on.
Take your time. She just rang me just now.
So we can get Connie
back on.
That's okay.
Come on, Connie. The beauty of editing.
So,
hey.
I disconnected. First of all,
okay. Yeah, my watch lit up and said, Connie Moore's on the line. Wow. So, Connie and Jen, you still there?
Yes, I'm going to try and stay right here because...
Jennifer, are you still there? Okay, Connie, you just missed a really 100 conversation we had about people with disabilities and the work environment. You just missed a really heavy conversation about my views that they really don't want people with disabilities in a work environment because they don't know how to manage them. That's my view. Jennifer's view is totally opposite of that. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, can you recap a little bit about what your view is about hiring people with disabilities in a work environment?
In a more simplistic way, thank you for that, Bill. I was just making the statement that people in general, non-work environment, have an affliction towards people that have disabilities or people that are just not like them. Mm-hmm. And that goes across all lines, color, you know, political views,
right.
You know, economic status, all of it, right? Mm-hmm. Down to even, you know, what their hair looks like. It's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So I get that. That's just the people mechanics. Mm-hmm. Now you put those same individuals in a position of leadership or management. It doesn't change anything, right? They might be an expert in the discipline of their job, which is, let's say, to oversee a particular line of business. But when it comes to people and being a good people manager, right, that's a whole different set of requirements and training. Mm-hmm. So to Bill, I can agree to some level that employers struggle to give folks who are, one, disabled an opportunity, two, folks that don't come from the same industry, to give them a shot, right? Like an opportunity to learn and do well. That's not common in our country in most of the positions that pay well, right? You have to have a long history within the industry and or know someone to then get to the next level. That's just fact. So yes, you know, a lot has been done for the disabled population, right? There's continued programs and advancements for that. It's still not even equal, right, to people of color not getting the same opportunities. So today, it's been stated, so this is facts, that the disabled population is still the largest minority within the workforce.
Yes, ma'am.
Right.
100%.
Yep. You know what I think about that, Jen? You know, it's like, for instance, it's like you, me, and Bill. Right. And we talked about the dynamics of people in your life, you know, are there for a purpose, you know, so it comes back to humanity 101, you know, where folks recognize that my wheel turns because she also pushes. You understand? So it's to come back to being centered as human beings. Everyone has purpose. They're in your life for a reason. Learn it. Because, you know, you ever notice that you keep meeting the same disabled or whoever people over and over again? The same whatever affliction it is over. You meet, it's like the person just changed skin and it's the same human being. You know, and at what point are you going to look and say, well, there's something I need to learn here?
Yes.
So
all the time.
You know, so who is expendable? Who can be cast aside? Who is no good? What's the garbage in society? You know, so it's like we have to do human training again.
Listen, I kind of talked about this on my first podcast with you, Bill, and this goes back to what I said. It is kind of a cliche, but it's facts again in terms of my truth. If we were all taught from day one what love really is, then so much of our conflict with each other and ourselves would not exist. And I don't mean like romantic love. I'm not talking about that. Just common decency of self and therefore others. So just like you didn't emulate, let's say, a great marriage with your parents when you were talking about, you know, love attraction and setting goals and manifestation, same thing, right? If you don't know what love looks like, if you don't know what it looks like to like yourself or to be kind to yourself, then you're not going to do it. And then you're just going to perpetuate what you've been taught, right?
Yeah.
So that's my whole angle. Like, I have taken the last 10 years to untrain my limited beliefs that I was taught, and then I've incorporated new ones, more appropriate ones for the time, and I'm choosing to then talk about that with other people because I know what my purpose is, which is to bring joy and happiness to every person I encounter.
That's I love it. I love it because it's as if Jen is decided to create her own movie, excuse me, in her head, you know, about what things should be, and that's the only way things change is to create a new scenario. There's to be a new screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I hear, you know, you say, Jen, that, you know, you create your own reality. So it goes back to what you attract to life. And then if you know that somehow you have attracted it to your life, certainly you can't be mad at it. I've attracted this because there's something for me to get out of this. So let me see what it is. You know what
you're
I mean?
You're so right. Oh, my gosh, you're so right. And I'm so excited that you said this because you attract where you are. Right. Like you don't meet people just by coincidence. Right. No, it's not luck.
Right.
It's by design. Meaning I met you, Bill, by design, sitting outside having lunch. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We just happened to be seated together. I wasn't even looking to sit next to you. There was another table and I could have sat anywhere, but I sat next to you and your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And right? Look, like, what you're learning. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Learning so much about you and then meeting you, Connie, and then understanding, you know, a little bit more about your guys' lives. It all makes sense. So you attract what I'll say the universe in terms of your frequency is presenting to you as the lesson to learn, which is why I've come to the place of acceptance. That's a difficult thing to do. I come to a place of acceptance of people and acceptance of myself. So I could talk with you. I could not align with your thinking, but I can accept that that's who you are and keep it moving. Right? You don't have to get into my inner circle. I don't have to think that you're a jerk, right? You might have very strong opinions and I may not agree with them, but that doesn't make me or my beliefs any better than yours.
Right. I like that then, because there's no right and wrong. It just is.
Oh, God. It's just, I mean, granted, we want there to be synergy, right? We all want, hopefully, the same things, you know, like liberty and the pursuit of happiness, as they say. But how we get there is different. But at the end of the day, you know, we're not all the same thing. We may be made up of the same things in terms of the ingredients, but the way in which we all show up are different.
Right, right, right. But all makes it makes a good stew. You know, it makes a good stew.
Yes.
You know, I think that's the point, that all these ingredients are necessary, because, you know, it's just my understanding that you come into this world having made a contract with what they're going. Otherwise, why would you be here?
Why'd you come here?
Yeah. So whoever you encounter, that's part of you, baby. Get in there and learn what it is you're supposed to learn, because it's the elevation of frequency. The only way to do that is to be present.
Yes.
It's about present. In this present moment, because most suffering comes from people who are in the past or in the future. In the present, I am warm. In the present, I am safe. And you know, to piggyback on what you were saying about diet and emotions, you know, what we were talking about before, is that when you are present, part of overeating and overseeing it over everything that you do that it may be detrimental to you, you know, is not being in the present. At this present moment, I have food. So I don't need to gorge on, you know, or stuff. In the present, I am warm. So I don't need to put on 10 coats because at the moment, I am warm. You know, so it just really alleviates so much suffering when you sit for a moment and have appreciation, deep understanding and appreciation for, in the moment, I am safe. So the emotional eating goes with, in the moment, no one's attacking me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
kind of like just being grateful for what you actually have, not what you lack.
Right.
Right. That's what mindfulness is about, being really grateful about where you are. We're so conditioned to want the next thing, the next shiny thing.
It's just these big giant capitalists sometimes, and we just gorge ourselves on everything and feel like, you know, when COVID first started, people ran and took all the tissues. Remember, guys, off the shelf and on and everything else.
Oh, we
have gallons already. You know, but when you're living in fear, it's because you are not present.
I'm right there with you.
You know, you're not present, and fear is such an awful thing to do to your body. it makes you run to Wendy's or grab, you know,
Wait a minute. Leave my Wendy's alone now.
Actually,
y'all, I'm not going to do I haven't been doing Wendy's lately. I've been patting myself on the back. I've been cooking my own meals here. Yeah.
And you're better cook and everything's wonderful. Your house smells really nice. Your wife loves it. I'm sure it's wonderful. This works.
It's okay.
This works. Who listen to me? You know, one thing, Jen, that I love about your plan is that, you know, you smell like what you eat.
Oh, gosh.
And then folks say, I'm just feeling funny because chicks will say, or dudes will say, listen, she smells like White Castle. Driving through your cheeks, so go home and make her meal so she can smell like strawberries. What is wrong?
He smelled like White Castle. I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, how romantic is that? You ever walk into a room, you smell like complete White Castle. You are what you eat. So you smell like White Castles, and you're wondering, can you have a kiss? No.
No.
Yeah,
I get it.
But people smell like curry, and they still get kisses.
Oh, yeah. Very much.
You know, they still get kisses. They still get, you know, they still get their stuff off. You know.
Bill? It depends. Are we talking curry, garlic?
Curry, no, garlic.
It's really good. It's just not my perfume.
Yeah. Goal setting has a lot of different things wrapped up in that. Like, you know, it's different for people, you know, that have illnesses to set goals and to make them, happen. And I'm glad that we had this discussion about goals because, you know, a lot of listeners on this podcast are people who had some type of life, you know, event. And I've learned that through my analytics team is that, you know, there's people now listening to this podcast in Russia, in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, in the Netherlands. Amazing. So, you know, I think the information that we're sharing today goes a long way about mental health, you know, and physical health, and what we need to do just to maintain, you know, our lives at the optimum level, you know. So Jen and Connie, both of you guys were talking about earlier about you had questions for me. Do you still have those questions for me?
Well, I just wanted to really know, you know, how it affects you psychologically, because, you know, head of household, you know, is head of household, you know, everything trickles down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are the kids, like, even though my children are grown, I'm still, like, their biggest influence, you know, so, you know, and I noticed that, you know, Jen, with the plan that, you know, I've sort of been living the plan, and I'm glad because now I can live even more of it. But, you know, I noticed my children go in the morning. They chop up ginger. They chop up garlic. They chop up red onion. They put red. They use cayenne pepper. They put lime. And so, you know, when my son said, oh, I'll just take this antibiotic. You see how it happens? You see how you change the vision of your family, past, present, and future? You know, meaning in the past, this is what he did. In the present, this is a manifestation. And in the future, here's where we're going in terms of our health.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. My children.
And I noticed how powerful. Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, what about Jen, your children in that?
Or Jennifer's children. Jennifer, your children.
Yeah, what about them? I'm sorry.
We're talking about how the influence that we have, you know, with the diet and the vision that we have for ourselves. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, my children were not happy about it. So my kids were like, Mom, that's what you're doing for you. That's great. We're happy. We'll support you. But please do not stop making amazing meals that include meat for us. And I said, well, I really appreciate your feedback. I said, but that's not what's going to happen. So for 75 days, you guys are going to eat what I'm eating because I only make one meal. I'm not catering to three different individuals.
So this is for the betterment
of my mind, of my abilities to be a better person, which will therefore make me a better mom, a better friend, a better sister, et cetera. So here goes. So I got pushback the first 30 days. You know, like, why didn't you ask us? And this isn't fair. And I'm like, you guys, this is not a discussion. This is not a democracy. This is a dictatorship. I'm your mom. Mm-hmm. This is what we're doing.
Because didn't they dictate to you again when they made those shitty diapers?
They definitely dictated a lot. Yes.
Dictated, you didn't get a choice. And whether
none.
You wanted a loose running one that ran up your back. Or put in your over there in the middle of some meeting.
Oh,
get
my
your
goodness.
Ass and take a giant dump. And I'm telling you, that was a dictation. That was mama's rule. Ain't that right, Bill?
Well, now that I'm retired, Dad does most of the cooking here now. So I do most of the cooking and I cook for senior citizens. I take food over to my mother-in-law in the senior citizens building. And there's always somebody saying, Bill, when you going to bring those ribs over here? Some old guy, real old guy, 90 years old. Bill, I want them ribs, you know, and I cook them for him. If he wants them, I'll cook them for him, you know, but cooking for me. Cooking for me is love. It's a love thing for me. You know,
yeah.
You know, cooking is a way to show how you love, appreciate people. So for me, for my life, well, my one kid is like, we are a mixed race. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my kids is like, you know, on the soul food side, you know. Man, I'm telling you, man. And another one of my kids will burn up would burn up cornflakes.
Yeah.
You know, and they're on the other side. And you know, I cook for everybody, but you know what? They cook what they want to cook. They, you know, Ubers, you know, they Uber food, you know, but I basically cook for me and my wife. And my wife does not eat red meat. Since we've been married like 37 years.
Right.
And like, she does not eat red meat. So I cook vegetables. If I'm eating meat, I just cook meat for me. Because basically we have an empty nest here. So it's gotten a lot easier, you know, as going along. When I had the stroke, I was home a lot. So, you know, I think on one of my podcasts, my first podcast, that's why it's called Scrambled Eggs and Ham. Because Jennifer and Connie, I would try to cook breakfast, cook food every day, and I end up setting the house on fire. Because what I would do is I'd start cooking something on the stove and forget about that it was cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So I burnt up a lot of cookware. I set the house on fire a couple of times. You know, I used to come home. My wife would be pissed at me. The house smelled like the house was on fire. All the pans in the sink, all black. And then I see her looking in a telephone book, and I'd be like, well, damn, she's looking for a divorce lawyer, you know? And
oh, yeah, that's a divorce right there.
You know how many times we replaced the cookware in this house when I first had the stroke back in 2009, 2010? That's when I had my stroke, 2009, around that time. And we replaced like everything in the kitchen. Everything was smoky, everything, you know. And then, you know, I was studying software engineering because they said I couldn't do it. I said I could do it. I could pass it, you know. And my professor knew that I had a stroke, and most of the people in my labs, you know, software labs, were stroke survivors or they had an aneurysm, you know. And the test was that it was sponsored by Kessler Rehab. That's where we got our grants from. We wrote grants for them. And, you know, they wanted to, you know, my professor found out that I was burning the house up every day, trying to cook for myself.
Wow.
And then he sat me down at his desk, and he said, Bill, he said, have you ever heard of cereal? And I said, damn, he's right. Why am I trying to cook and burning the house up? And there's cereal here. I just pour it in a bowl, put some milk, and I'm good to go for, you know, for a couple of hours. But then this heard about it, that I was setting the house on fire. And it came over.
So you can't let the cereal drink here. You burn your house.
You know, and it came over, and they said, listen, you stop cooking here, right? And what they provided me was this computer that would automatically turn the stove off after a certain time.
Stop your mess.
You know, some kind of like device they attached to my stove. So that's my story with cooking. And then I, you know, as my life, as I did rehab at Kessler, and I studied software, and I studied different technologies, and I studied behavior health, because I had to become my own advocate. You know, because there was a difference between how different people of color were treated that had strokes and people who weren't color were treated.
Right.
And I seen that, you know, I seen that early, and a lot of other people of color seen that and they were mad. And so I had to become, I had to study psychology. I went back and I studied neuropsychology. And then I got into behavioral health very heavily, and I got hired in that. And, you know, that's my story about cooking. And now I could cook anything now without, I don't have to worry about, you know, burning up the house, you know. And then there's Alexa, you know, Alexa will tell me, Bill, it's 15 minutes is up. Turn that shit off. Turn that stove off. You know, I use devices. I use technology to my benefit to navigate my life. And it works for me, you know, but cooking for me is like Jen said, you know, I didn't like to do that, you know. When the kids were small, I had to cook for this one, for her, for him. You know, it was hell, you know, for me trying to do that as a stroke survivor for all these different people who didn't like this. So, you know, I got through it. I chant Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. That really helped me develop my, redevelop my dendrites and those things in the brains and you know.
Wasn't that fortune, though? Wasn't it fortune without the obstacle, you know? You're just operating more of your brain.
Yeah.
You know, so who won? You did. The things you didn't know about the other side of your brain, now you've got, you know, you're full circle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and then I had to attract the right doctors and physicians and neurologists. I had to attract them because some people didn't have that ability, didn't have that, you know, and they complained, they dropped out. And, you know, I use everything as a sense of personal growth. Even if you don't like me, even if I'm in a difficult situation, I use it as a sense, I use it for personal growth. You always win. When you use...
Did you ever feel like a sense of isolation, and did you document like your habits? I wish, you know, if you could, you know, talk about, like, you know, share, if you will, you know, the different things you put in your body and notice, you know, because when you started cooking and you put the fast food down, it was because you had to, but then it was because you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And what triggered that? What emotion came over you? Because for me, a large part of cooking is I want to smell something. I want to smell something that addresses an emotion. You know, like when you're feeling, when it's cold and maybe you feel isolated or maybe you feel lonely, you make a pot of chicken soup.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you think about your parents that you miss that have passed away and you bake a cake. You know, different things like that. Food is so tied into emotions. And what was that like, you know, when you found, because it's isolating, you know, when any illness is the first thing is isolation.
Yeah.
The rest of the world goes on. And then, you know, initially there's, oh, Bill's sick. And then there's, okay, Bill, get over yourself. You know, that part.
Well, you know what? Today is my mother's birthday.
Happy birthday, Mama. What's her name?
Azarine.
Azarine. That's so pretty. Why didn't I think of that? Okay, go ahead, Bill.
And I think Jennifer dropped off, right?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, no. Okay. Mm-hmm. So your question was...
The emotional aspect.
It's heavy because, you know, when you are the breadwinner and you're the go-to person, right? You know, the husbands, if you're in a relationship with a husband, there's a husband and a wife and children. And most of the times, dad is the go-to person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only is dad the ATM, right?
What?
Yeah. So I was the ATM.
What planet is that? Let me go there.
So I was the ATM and I was the go-to person before I had the stroke. But after you have a life-changing event like that in your life, and the kids are young, and my kids were young when I had a stroke, You know, it's a whole lot of isolation. It's a whole lot of, you know, you know, are you a burden to your family type thinking, right? Am I now a burden to people? Am I a burden to my family? So
yeah,
one of the things that I'm so grateful of is this organization called the SGI USA.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did not let me dwell on those things. They were always here chanting with me. In the beginning, I had, you know, I was so effed up from the stroke. I had, my eye was closed. My left hand was, I couldn't use my left hand.
Wow.
You know, I had to really chant. I chanted like 5 hours a day. And a lot of times those members, SGI members, Buddhist members, were at my house supporting me, chanting with me. You know, if I needed a ride, they would give me a ride. You know, I was, fortunately for me, I was still able to drive, but not without instruments. You know what I'm saying? Not without navigation systems. I was not able to find myself home to my house without a navigation system. This was early in my recovery. And then what helped the most was, second thing to help was Kessler Rehab. The people at Kessler, you know, doing rehab. And then it was support groups where everybody in that group had something to talk about, what they were struggling with, how they battled it.
And you didn't
it.
Get a chance to have a, like a, you know, because, I mean, we all, right, Jen, like to have a complete pity party. Woo, when we have them. We don't need them often, but when we get it, boy, is it a blast.
Oh, you know, we had that. That's part of venting. We had pity parties, but we also had a neurologist there to bring us back to what we, you know, want to achieve. I had a great director, nurse, who she passed away. Her name was Betty Collins, and she was absolutely incredible with stroke survivors and people with aneurysms and cancer and depression and all these different things. She was absolutely like, you know, she knew what you were feeling almost. To get that kind of feeling, she knew what you were struggling with. She knew who should get out of the marital bed and who should get back in the marital bed. She knew relationships, you know, because...
That relationship thing, because that's tough too, you know. Who knows why, you know, I mean, you know, and only you will know, you know, why that had to happen. But in terms of the relationship now, that's deep.
It's changed.
Ooh, when there's an illness, the relationship, whether you're married, single, with your friends, your husband, whoever, there's such a drastic change, you know. And I think, Red Jen, that it's mostly because, like Bill was saying, you feel like a burden. And how do you change that? Like, you know, Bill said that, you know, he used the practice and so many people to look. You know, there's different aspects. There's the breakup in relationships, disappointment in dating. I know, you know, to me, I think when I separated from my husband, and we're still separated, and ain't nothing else passed in, but then we just the most separated people in the world. How long are you going to be separated for life? But then, you know, but still there's you change, like I change in terms of once I got better, and Jen, you know, like I used to tell Bill, I lost 120 pounds, you know, I said losing 120 pounds, you know, people don't know how to take you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because folks, you know, generally want to treat you the way that's comfortable to them, you know, the way you used to appear, you know, and that's a struggle too, because I was this before and now I'm this, because once you recover, you recover.
Yeah.
So you're you know what I mean? You're a different person, and it's difficult to retrain people. And a lot of times I think, like in marriage and relationships and stuff like that, we go back and we have to retrain people on how to treat us.
Mm-hmm. But we have to retrain ourselves too. And you know what? I am better now since I had the stroke. I am so much a better person, a more compassionate person. A more, person that, you know, outspoken, a better fighter, more courageous. I might well say better looking too, with a bald head, but.
Yeah, I definitely, how about you, Jen? I went and got myself a cup of fine, honey. Yes, I did. Oh, sister, no. Listen, sister, when God, because you do all that for yourself. You work so hard. Only you know what it was like. Oh, I'm going to put this in a pretty package. You understand?
Yeah.
You understand? You have strokes, you have different things. Man, no. I'm going to look younger than I ever thought I could be. I'm going to be more beautiful, more kind, more loving than I ever thought I could be.
Mm. You know,
and then train, and then it's to set boundaries so that folks can't come back at you with the old you.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier, Bill, about acceptance. It all, again, so many of these things just weave into each other, right?
Right.
So when you like who you are, you show up differently to the world, which then gives a different, you know, reality to the people that you're now interacting with. And then so on, so forth, et cetera, right? Yeah. So you don't have, for people that don't choose to have acceptance, they're really judging is what they're doing. So they're evaluating the other person and then making judgments about what they're saying to then determine how they feel, to then decide if they want to continue the conversation or have a rebuttal that may be offensive or really steering the other individual to get on their side of the opinion. Mm-hmm. Where if we can get to a place of learning, right, and just understanding the diversity of others, we'll be in a much safer place, right? We can stand from a position of fact, not emotion, not... again, being in the moment is positive and good, but it's not so reactionary, right? Because
you teach
people how to treat you, right? That's just, that is a fact. That's, exactly. And people treat you the way, again, that you allow them to. So even in our meeting, Bill, right, we sat next to each other, we met, we said nice pleasantries, right? I could have decided I didn't want to have a conversation with you and your wife. I could have been pleasant, but then just stopped talking. But I didn't, right? I met you guys. You were engaging. We had really, I think, very thoughtful and even thought-provoking conversation in a very short period of time that we met. And it was fantastic because I was in learning mode. I wanted to hear what you had to say.
Right. But, you know, I wasn't going to sit by you. We sat so close together outside, right? Tables were together. Connie, I'm like, I'm not going to sit there and like and ignore you.
Right.
Well, because you're there together. So it must be for a reason. Definitely being a Buddhist, you know, I'm here sitting next to you. So let me go ahead and learn this lesson.
Yeah. You know, some people, Jennifer, would have sat right there, said, hey, how you doing? And not said nothing to you the whole, half 45 minutes. We're sitting out there eating turkey. What's it? Veggie burgers is what we had, right? It was veggie burgers. And she didn't finish hers. But I said, hey, you know what? I am going to introduce myself to these people because, you know what? Everybody has a Buddha nature. Everybody has it. You just got to bring it out.
Okay.
You know, everybody's cool. Everybody has a Buddha nature. And I'm going to introduce myself and say hello to her and her friend, which is a very cool guy. I know his name, but I'm not going to say it on the air.
Okay.
I can say his name, right?
Of course you can.
Joe.
Yes.
And Joe was sitting there.
Hey, Joe.
And I put Joe at ease. I put him at ease. I said, you know, hey, Joe, I heard you shot your woman down, you know. Which is Jimi Hendrix, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're hilarious.
You never heard a Jimi Hendrix song?
Of course I have.
Hey, Joe, I heard you shot your woman down. Going to something
I
like
get
that.
It.
Yeah. Okay. So then he smiled.
I'm just his singing short.
Yeah, but then Joe smiled. He said, oh, this, you know, this is cool. He's going to sing Jimi Hendrix song to me. And then I looked back over at you, and then we look at each other, and I had a bottle of wine. Jill, I didn't know you were doing a 75-day hard that day.
Right.
Right. That's why you didn't drink anything. Any alcohol.
Nope.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, see. I'm receptive. Mm. I'm sensitive. I'm a sensitive guy. And she had water. And Joe didn't drink anything either.
No,
you know, and he was supporting you by not drinking things. But me, I had a whole bottle of wine that I bought from the store. And it was the nastiest $25 bottle of wine I ever had. It wasn't worth it. It was not worth $4. It was $25 and I paid
for it. Boom Farm back.
Yeah. I wish it was Boom Farm. You know, it would have been better. But anyway, it was a good day. And Jen chanted with us. right? She did Ganyo.
I did. That's amazing. That's amazing.
She chanted with us. She did Ganyo. You know, I'm like, wow, man, this woman is a Buddha. She's chanting. Namuharindukyo. Wow, just damn, Jen, you're such a beautiful person. Most people.
I appreciate it. Thank you. This is wonderful.
Yeah, you're such a beautiful person. That. You know, such an open mm-hmm. person to listen. You know, you practice what you preach. You mm-hmm. definitely do, and that's rare. That's rare. That is rare yeah. today. That is rare. So yeah. many people I met.
Yeah, so authentic. You know, just so wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, Jen's like the kind of human that's human.
Yeah, she's a
I don't know what the rest of this is. I don't know what
Go ahead, Connie.
But you're I such appreciate a human. That.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, she's so easy to, you know, because you just want a human being to talk to, you know, who you don't have to know everything, because if you know anything, you know you don't know everything, you know. Mm-hmm. And she's just wonderful, and you're too, Bill, and being together here was no mistake, you know, such fortune. You have something to share, for all of us, you know, learning together. But it's a specific recipe, us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wherever you are in the present, that's a recipe specific to you.
Yeah,
is what I'm loving.
Yeah, and on that note, listen, we have to end the podcast now. And this afternoon, my name is Bill Clark. I'm the host of the Scrambled Eggs and Ham podcast. And this afternoon, we had Jennifer Key and Connie Moore. And you can hear their experiences on the Scrambled Eggs and Ham podcast. Connie's is From Bars to Brushes. And Jennifer's is Breaking the Silence. Yeah, Breaking the Silence. You get an opportunity. Take a listen. I think they're both wonderful guests, and they have something to say that I think you guys out there need to hear. So thank you so
much. Thank you. Appreciate it. It's really wonderful. Thank you, Bill. You know,
you're very welcome.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you for coming on today.
You set the platform, dude.
Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for coming on today, Jennifer and Connie. Thanks for listening. Okay. The listeners out there, thank you for listening and your support, you know, supporting this podcast. My sincere prayers are for your health and your happiness, and that you live out your lives to the fullest. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Connie. And okay. The listeners, have a victorious week. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. Much appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Connie. High five.
Woo! High five, girl.
I'm still here. I am still with you guys. I'm just going to...
Oh, so much fun. Thank you. I mean, this is a wonderful thing we're doing. You know? Guys are family. This is wonderful.
Well, this is fantastic. Thank you.